Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call the Legacy Finance Division meeting to order. Welcome, everybody. We're coming over from session, and we have a brand new member. It was nice to meet him, and we all had some treats. That was quite nice. Well, I don't know his journey. Might have a new member on our committee. I don't know. I don't know if anybody's had an opportunity to peek at the minutes. Representative Erdahl, have you had a chance to? Oh, Representative Green.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I looked at the minutes. I'd like to move them.
Thank you, Representative Green, for making us look good and doing that. Any questions to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? So we've approved the minutes for the March 22nd meeting. Thank you, Representative Green. So I have on the agenda today is a bill that's House File 2682, and I'm sure all the chairs that have been in my seat in the past have had vehicle bills. So essentially that's what we're doing. We're hoping to move a vehicle bill to Ways and Means. So I'm asking your support on that. So that's essentially what House File 2682 is, in case things need to move differently towards the end of session. So I Representative Heitzman?
Are you alluding to something? You could. Is there something we should know?
Representative Heitzman, I don't even know, but sometimes we're told from higher ups of how to move and how to work in this place. So appreciate your support.
I'm trying to figure out who's higher than Chair Lilly.
Representative Heitzman, you can be secure in knowing that there's many higher than I am. So I'd like to move that House File 2682 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. So we have that before us. Any discussion? Again, I'd like your support just to move this to Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? Thank you for your support on that, and not too difficult of questions. I appreciate that. So we're going to kind of mix things up a little bit. We're going to have people that are going to come forward and tell us about some of the projects that are going all over the state. And as chair of this committee, I just wanted members to know, I mean, this is one third of our entire budget goes to the Lasard-Sams area. And I was lucky enough by the Speaker Dowd to be appointed to be on the Lasard-Sams as a member. And Representative Fabian and myself have served the last couple of years. And so we've had the opportunity to see some of these projects. And I thought it'd be kind of fun to have the folks come in and just kind of tell about a few of the projects, because there's really some neat stories that often we don't get to hear as members. So I hope members will enjoy this. I think it's important, because in years past, we just kind of pass Lasard-Sams. And I think this is an opportunity to kind of hear the great work that's going on all over the state. So so that's kind of where we're going to proceed. We have does everyone have an agenda that has, like, people that are testifying? Okay, so you'll see the list. And so we're going to kind of start in the middle. And I'm going to start with Mr. Pavelko. He is a staff member that works with the Lasard Council and does a great job. So the Lasard Council is a separate entity that kind of oversees and works with the projects all over the state. And later on, when I go up and do my bill, I'll have Mr. Johnson, who's the director, and then Joe. Joel, what is your title exactly?
Mr. Chair, members, assistant director.
Assistant director, okay. And there's also Sandy Smith and Becky Enfield are with the team, and they do a good job working with many of these folks that will come up later today, and quite honestly, probably, I don't know how many, 100 more maybe, that put in proposals during these last 10 years. So, Mr. Pavelko, would you like to go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, Joe Pavelko, Assistant Director with Lasard Sam's staff. Funny story before we start. Representative Lilly asked if we could round up some proposers to come and talk about their projects today, and so I called everyone and forgot to tell them that it was on request from Representative Lilly, and so a lot of them said no. And then after I said, well, actually, Representative Lilly wants to, they said, well, of course, yes. So, but part of we wanted to keep it short and also keep it more to pictures. So you won't get a lot of numbers. It's going to be more of, you know, here's what the funds have done in the ground projects. So you'll see a lot of before and after pictures. We tried to pick a good representation from all over the state. So you'll see some from Southwest to the Metro to Southeast and so forth. So the first presenter we have is Neil Feakin with the Nature Conservancy. And everybody has PowerPoints, and some even have videos.
Thank you, Mr. Pavelko, and welcome, Neil. And please state your name for the record, and excited to hear what you have to say. You know, just to check in, everybody, we're, you know, as everybody probably has heard over and over, we're almost at halftime in the legacy amendment. So we're 10th year, and it's really, I think it's a great moment to kind of reflect a little bit and see what's been done in the first 10 years. And then and my goal as chair is that, I'm sorry, Representative Green, but I hope that we can renew it in 15 years. So, but that, anyways, go ahead, sir.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Neil Feakin. I'm the Grassland Conservation Program Director for the Nature Conservancy here in Minnesota. I'm also the project manager for the Minnesota Prairie Recovery Project, which I'll talk about in a little bit more detail. Before I get too far into this, I do want to start by thanking Chairman Lilly and other members of the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. I know that it's an onerous task to go through all of the proposals. I think they receive about three times as many requests as what the funding is available. And the process that's been put in place and the way they adhere to that, I think, is really admirable. So thank you for that effort that you and your council fellow council members put into that. So I'm going to touch briefly on three programs that have been funded for a number of cycles through the Outdoor Heritage Fund that the Nature Conservancy manages. And those are the Northern Tallgrass Prairie National Wildlife Refuge, the Southeast Minnesota Protection and Restoration Program, and finally the Minnesota Prairie Recovery Program. A few things that they all have in common is that they all work to protect and restore and enhance some of the most special places that we have here in the state of Minnesota. They all have opened up new recreational opportunities for both local residents as well as statewide residents, and not just for hunting, but also for trout fishing, photography, hiking, just general outdoor use. And they each offer multiple benefits. So it's wildlife habitat, but it's also water quality, it's water quantity, and it's carbon storage because of a lot of protection restoration work that we're doing. And then finally, each of these projects is done in partnership with others. The Nature Conservancy is not doing this solely on our own. So the first project that I want to talk about a little bit is the Northern Tallgrass Prairie National Wildlife Refuge. This is a little bit different than a traditional wildlife refuge in that it doesn't have a discrete boundary. Most refuges are fairly small in their footprint. The Northern Tallgrass Prairie Wildlife Refuge is 77,000 acres, but it's spread across western Minnesota and all the way down into Iowa. And it's authorized to do fee title and conservation easements with the intent of protecting examples of different types of northern tallgrass prairie throughout the range of that ecotype. As you'll see on the map, it's roughly the western third of Minnesota. Also on the map in front of you, there are some blue lines. Those represent prairie core areas and prairie corridors that were identified through the Minnesota Prairie Conservation Plan. And our role through this program is to help the service fill out that 77,000 acres of authorized acquisitions. To date, we've done about 5,500 acres, roughly split between fee title and conservation easements, all of which is either owned or held by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. One project that I wanted to highlight, this is a conservation easement that you're seeing in front of you that was done in Pope County. It's roughly 450 acres, And for years, it was identified by the Minnesota County Biological Survey as one of the most biologically significant prairies left in the state of Minnesota. It was under private ownership. The landowner loves this land. He uses it for grazing, but he wants to make sure that it gets protected, that the next generations can't come in and plow it up. So we did a conservation easement, which is held by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. This program is particularly important for game and non-game species. You'll find pheasants, deer, waterfowl, the typical hunting species, but because this program focuses on native prairie, it's also extremely important to those declining species that are endemic to prairies in Minnesota. Just some examples that you're seeing in front of you is the Blanding's turtle, Topeka Shiner, the Dakota Skipper, the Regal Fritillary. So it's really about more than just game species. Moving across the state, I want to spend a couple minutes on the Southeast Minnesota Protection Restoration Program. We do this in partnership with the Minnesota Land Trust and Trust for Public Lands. This is some of the most spectacular and unique geographies that we have here in Minnesota. And this program focuses on upland forests, riparian floodplains, and hillside prairies. To date, we've protected together about 3,000 acres in fee title ownership, which has been transferred to the DNR. And we've done about 2,000 acres of easements. The picture you see in front of you is the Seven Springs Wildlife Management Area. And this one's particularly appealing to me because it's a karst geography. So protecting this watershed has been extremely beneficial to the groundwater in the area. It also lies in the Forestville Mystery Cave Complex, and it connects some of those state park parcels. The largest project we've done with Outdoor Heritage Fund to date is the 1,050-acre Choice WMA, which is located in Fillmore County. And this is an example of covering all three of those landscapes. It's got riparian floodplain, it's got upland forest, and it's got prairies on it. It includes 3 miles of trout stream, and it's open for public recreation, again, for people from the area, but also coming down from the metro and other parts of the state. And then finally, the last program I want to talk about is the one that I'm most familiar with because I manage it. It's our Minnesota Prairie Recovery Program. The funds we receive through this body, we use about half of it for protection of native prairie and associated grasslands, and the other half is used to enhance the quality and to accelerate management on permanently protected grasslands, which means primarily DNR and Fish and Wildlife Service lands. To date, we've protected about 6,500 acres of native prairie through this program. The project you'll see in front of you is the Lake Johanna Esker, and this is located in northern Polk County. And this is, to me, is kind of a neat story because it started with a 45-acre marginal soybean field. It was not profitable to farm. We were approached if we wanted to buy it, and normally we wouldn't have any interest in a 45-acre soybean field. But this one was surrounded by high-quality native prairie, and we saw an opportunity to use that as a tool to round out that complex. And after purchasing that 45 acres, the neighbors started coming to us and asking if we'd be interested in their land. And so using Outdoor Heritage Funds, we put together over a 1,000-acre complex of really high-quality native prairie, and it's a beautiful spot. The pictures you see on the right, the top one is before. The prairie was covered in cedar trees. We went in and took those cedars out. We actually used the biomass from those cedars for turkey litter. And it was a valuable natural resource when they had bird flu come through, and they used those to compost turkey. So we were able to find a use for those. We didn't just cut them down and burn them up. But the prairie bounced back after we took those cedars off. It's just a phenomenal spot. There's wild prairie onions, echinacea. We haven't done any seeding. It just came back naturally. And then finally, the last project I want to talk about is our ability to accelerate land management on publicly, permanently protected lands. We've done about 120,000 acres of enhancement work with these funds. Some of the tools we have at our disposal are prescribed fire, we use conservation grazing, and we use mechanical woody removal to take trees off of prairie sites. I like to talk about this in the context of infrastructure development. A lot of the projects we do are fairly expensive. You don't get a lot of acres at one shot, and sometimes they cost a lot of money. But once you do it, you don't have to do it again. And we can just roll it into DNR management, Fish and Wildlife Service management, and it's going to be a much, much cheaper property to manage over the long term, thanks to the infusion of money from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. And so with that, I will once again say thank you to this body, to the citizens of Minnesota, for passing this constitutional amendment, making these funds available, and be happy to answer any questions or I can move on.
Yep. Thank you very much for coming. I appreciate seeing the Representative Murphy will be happy that I mentioned this, to see a legacy logo on your signs and that sort of thing. I have a question for Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, you started out with Northern Tallgrass Prairie Restoration. I do see that there's some of that in this bill. And this particular one purchases 700 acres and then another easement on 400. But you said that the tall grass is open to the public. Is that true?
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, lands that's acquired in fee title and owned by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is open. Lands that are in conservation protected with a conservation easement are still in private lands and not open to the public.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, because in going through the binder, it says that the land is going to go to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and it's not open to the public.
Mr. Feakin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Green, the parcels that are in conservation easement are held. The easement is held by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and they will not be open to the public. Lands that are acquired in fee title are open to the public.
Okay. Representative Green.
Mr. Chair, and so, okay, so then what about pilt payments on these lands then for the county?
Mr. Feakin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Green, the Fish and Wildlife Service uses a different model than pilt that's called refuge revenue sharing, and it's based on a formula that's devised on a national basis, and those payments are allocated to the state based on that.
Representative Green.
Okay, do you know what the percentage is from that and what they would be getting, like on this the 705 acres as what it would have been if it had been a regular property tax?
Mr. Feakin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Green, I don't know that number off the top of my head, but we can certainly get it for you.
Representative Green.
Okay, thank you. I'll wait for another testimony.
Thank you. Sir, I was meeting one day with Mr. Johnson, and he showed up a map, and way up in the north, like up in Representative Fabian's district, there were some dots up on the map. And was that one of your projects that where they're cattling, and like they're using cattle right now? So some of the land is active. Is that one of your projects?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Could you tell us just real quickly about that, if it is?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we have done a number of acquisitions in Kitson County, and lands that are purchased through the Prairie Recovery Project, by and large, are owned and managed by TNC, and most of those properties are open for conservation grazing. Grazing is an important tool to manage our prairies. Prairies evolved with three things, grazing through bison or elk, drought, which we really can't control, and prescribed fire. And so we see our job is putting those things back on the ground, and cattle is a tool to help us do that.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for coming, and thank you for what you've done. I think a lot of great projects and around the state, and we'll have to get out and do some trout fishing, I think, down there.
Thank
you.
For the opportunity.
So, Mr. Terrell? Yep. Mississippi Headwaters, go ahead and state your name, and if you're ready to go, go. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tim Terrell, and I'm the executive director of the Mississippi Headwaters Board. The Mississippi Headwaters Board was created in 1980 as an alternative to federal control of the Mississippi River. And we're here today because although we have zoning authority on the Mississippi River in the counties of Clearwater, Hubbard, Beltrami, Cass, Itasca, Aiken, Crow Wing, and Morrison, we thought that this would be a great tool to help advance and protect the Mississippi River. So just some of our program goals were to protect the fish and wildlife habitat along the first 400 miles of the Mississippi River. We did that by working with our partners, Trust for Public Land, for the fee title acquisition, and RIM, Reinvested Minnesota Conservation Easements, by the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and the implementers would be the Soil and Water Conservation Districts in those counties. Our priorities, or our scope, is the main stem of the Mississippi River.
We have some new members. Could you just kind of just really quickly, I don't know who serves on environment committees or not, but just kind of quickly say what RIM is and what are those acronyms are, just to make sure that out of respect to some of the newer members.
Sure. RIM is a conservation easement program. I think Bowser could explain it better. It originally started in the 80s to protect wildlife habitat. It also is a great water quality type of easement in which that the landowner retains ownership of the land, but the development rights are paid to the willing landowner and sold, and they get a payment for doing that, promising that it will stay in trees, in our case, trees for a very for permanently in perpetuity. So that's just kind of a brief schedule of that.
Thank you. Sorry for the interruption.
No.
One of the things I always like about it is also has huge federal match, and I think in bonding we do some RIM effort, and Representative Hausman and Erdahl were leaders on that. And then, anyways. Go ahead, sir. Sorry.
So we just protect the main stem of the Mississippi River, the headwaters, lakes, and reservoirs, and the major tributaries of the river with this Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Grant. Our partners are obviously us, the Trust for Public Land, the Soil and Water Conservation Districts, which are boots on the ground and do a fabulous job trying to implement that RIM program. And then we also have support from the Department of Natural Resources and Nature Conservancy. As we move along and we look at accomplishments, we received three phases of funding from the legislature. It totals about $8.5 million. To date, we've accomplished 802 acres and 13 miles of shoreline protected. Three of those were acquisitions and 10 were RIM easements. And then we look at what's in process or what's in the hopper. We actually have two acquisitions and 11 easements. So when you look at what we've accomplished and then you look at what's actually in the hopper, we have 3,428 acres protected permanently with 24 miles plus of miles of shoreline protected. We did that in just 3 years. And we have to come back to Lasard this year because we're running out of funds. But that's a plug for you, by the way. So one of the things what we did is we came up with 6,600 parcels on the watersheds that drain towards the Mississippi River right next to it, and we said that's an awful lot. How can we scale that down? By working with Technical Service Area 8, they have a GIS person there, and we looked at parcels and we assigned points for riparian. If they were riparian parcels, if they were adjacent to other state and public land, and Q would be the habitat quality, if they have like a trout stream or they have rare and endangered habitat. So we ranked all those 6,600 parcels, and what we received was a map like this. This is Itasca County, but basically if I could draw your attention to the upper right-hand corner, you see 0 is the lowest priority and 10 is the highest priority. We asked the Soil and Water Conservation Districts to please solicit information and prospect on those 6 and higher so that you're not spending all that time mailing to landowners. You're getting the best of the best habitat. We think that's a good way to spend state money, is get the best habitat areas on this. And we did this across all 400 miles of the Mississippi River. And so they're implementing that and sending materials and information to those top landowners. Now, if some landowner walks in and we didn't prospect them, we'll still take their application. But this is, like I said, it's a screening tool. So that brought 6,600 parcels down to over 1,000 highest potentials, which now that makes that manageable. As an example, in Morrison County, we found 70 parcels that were at the high, 6 through 10. There's only 15 landowners. So that really brought it down into a very doable type of a thing. And then last, I just kind of wanted to bring this thing is we've heard the word moving the needle. How are we showing conservation in a short amount of time? This is a 3,400-acre watershed, and what we're doing up north here is we're looking at it when a watershed is protected, according to DNR research, at about 75%, it's 75% protected. It behaves, it infiltrates water, it works naturally. And so that's what we're kind of working at as a goal here. But we have many different people that we talk to, and they want to say, well, we know you're definitely targeting and prioritizing habitat. How do you, what are some of those secondary benefits like water quality and some of those things and recreational value? So this next one is that a watershed is blown up. It started with the infrastructure of 37% public land of county and state, so that's the baseline. Then we got this acquisition, that Trust for Public Land, and we donated it to the Department of Natural Resources because there's actually a lot of state land below that. Once again, the county made the decision who gets the land, not us. And then there was an interested landowner. He wasn't interested in selling, but he was interested in an easement where he could enjoy that land and also protect the Mississippi River. So you look at that, and that bumped it up to 51% protected. Then we looked at SFIA, which is State Forestry Incentives Act, because we're looking at the whole toolbox of tools to protect this, not just easements and acquisitions, zoning and all that, and it came to 65% protected. So when we look at all of this, and you look at the acquisitions, the biggest thing about ours is, oh, and by the way, that middle piece that kind of looks like a T, that actually 3 weeks ago the county accepted that donation, so that is going to be county public land as well. And that little chunk there that just kind of irritates me because it's just kind of in the middle of everywhere, that person's actually interested now in some type of land protection. So it's really working out. But this is basically showing how we're protecting a watershed with habitat. That's a beautiful corridor right on the Mississippi River that the animals can and flora and fauna, or the flora can fauna can travel on. But we're also getting water quality as well. We're getting recreational. So basically, we took a watershed that's 3,400 acres. It was 20 to 40% protected, and now we move the needle to 60 to 80% protected. That shows progress in 3 years. So we don't have to tell you in 20 years, well, this is what we did. We can tell you right in 3 years what happened. And we think that's a very measurable tool. I think if I were to take everything away from this and sum everything up, I would say, we're not up where we're at in the Mississippi Headwaters region. We're not just protecting land for habitat. We're protecting entire watersheds for habitat, water quality, recreation. Even though we're prioritizing for habitat, we're getting multiple benefits up there. And we think that it's a very powerful tool that we can use to really – it's being implemented actually in water plans and in the One Watershed, One Plan that is planning that's going on. So – if you have any questions, I'd entertain them.
Thank you very much. Great presentation. I didn't warn her, but Representative Wagenius, how many people drink off of, do you estimate, off of the Mississippi River in our state?
A million.
So a million.
I think it's like 1.2 million. We kind of ran those numbers as well. We've always kind of understood that we are protecting drinking water as well, and so far we have clean water coming down there.
Thank you very much. Thank you for coming today, and thank you for the work you're doing. So one of the partners too is our own state. So and they get quite a bit of funds, the DNR and other agencies in the state, but the DNR's been a big partner in doing projects, so we're about to hear from one. Ms. Barbel, please introduce yourself and go ahead when you're ready. And I see we have Mr. Myers in the crowd, so I'm glad you're here and for all the tough stuff, and then he can maybe we can get him for the easier things. Go ahead, sorry.
Mr. Chair and members, good afternoon. My name is Kathy Barbel, and I'm the coordinator of the Conservation Partners Legacy Program, or CPL, a grant program for small projects funded by the Outdoor Heritage Fund. Since the inception of the CPL, we've worked with partners all over the state and funded over 650 projects with 198 different government and nonprofit organizations. The average award of a CPL project is a little more than $96,000, and CPL projects have touched all but three Minnesota counties. I'd like to highlight three recent CPL projects. At Lebanon Hills Regional Park in Dakota County, our partners are working on several projects. One of their recent successes is Buck Pond. Buck Pond was heavily infested with reed canary grass and surrounded by degraded prairie and woodland habitat when this project was started. Dakota County Parks Department was able to complete a wetland scrape to remove the reed canary grass and expose the seed bank that remained under the sediment layer. The Parks Department staff was also able to restore 36 acres of prairie and 136 acres of woodland habitat. They removed invasive species and reintroduced native prairie and woodland species into the area. Blanding's turtles, which are classified as a threatened species in Minnesota, were particularly taken with this restoration. As you can see, the park has several new residents. The Pelican Group of Lakes Improvement District successfully removed an aging dam on Fish Lake in Otter Tail County. As the photos illustrate, the dam was deteriorating, leaving exposed rebar and crumbling concrete. The Improvement District replaced a dam with Rock Arch Rapids Fishway and can be traversed by aquatic species now, a benefit not only to Fish Lake, but the entire watershed. This project was so successful and came in so far under budget that the Improvement District will likely remove another dam in the watershed with the remainder of the grant money. You can see more about this project on the DNR Fisheries page. They have a video showing the fish enjoying their new passageway. And Raleigh-Johnson Natural and Recreational Area in Crow Wing County has successfully applied for and received several small grants through CPL. The recreational area consists of three islands which have been stabilized and protected from wave action and ice damage with CPL funding. Raleigh-Johnson has successfully restored the vegetation on a large portion of the island shorelines so that further erosion is prevented. These grantees were careful to point out how involved the public is in these areas. And because of this, they were able to far exceed the 10% match requirements because of the public contribution in both volunteer hours and cash donation. Though I've only given one organization credit for each of these projects, each one has multiple partners that contribute to the success of the project. So on behalf of the small conservation organizations throughout the state, thank you for your support.
Thank you, Ms. Barbel. Some of you might not know, this is really one of the gems of the whole program, and I think, and there's been a commitment, I think, to up it each year in the last, we'll hear from the council later, but they've upped it, and you've been great stewards of making sure these grants get all over the state. And I know Representative Fabian, for example, really likes this because it goes to some of the smaller groups and they can do projects, and you help facilitate that. So thank you very much. And if you have something in your communities, make sure you're applying for them and working through some of these small grants, because they can go a long way with a local Duck Unlimited group or Pheasants Forever or something. So thank you, Ms. Barbel.
Thank you.
Mr. Schneider.
Welcome. Good afternoon.
Thank you very much for coming. Please introduce yourself and
John Schneider, Director of Conservation Programs for Ducks Unlimited in Minnesota. Thanks for having me, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for all your work on the Lessard Council, and thanks to this committee for your legislative work. I was asked to bring, show me what button to push here, that one. Okay. I was asked to bring quite a few slides to show you the work we've done in the last 10 years, so I'm going to buzz through these pretty quick. Our work here in Minnesota is called our Living Lakes Initiative. Through that effort, we do two things. We enhance shallow lakes and we restore prairies and wetlands. We've received about $60 million, including the recommendation before the legislature this year. This year, we're being recommended for $6.1 million for land acquisition and restoration. Shallow lakes, quick primer, they exist in either a very turbid or a clear water state, and we like the clear water state for aquatic plants and aquatic invertebrates that the ducks need to eat here as they raise their young and migrate through the state. And it's really especially important to diving ducks, which have to make their living off wetlands. We've got challenges with our shallow lakes here in Minnesota. We've got carp, altered landscape hydrology, drainage, nutrient loading, and fish. We know how to deal with those challenges. However, we can, as Mr. Feakin indicated, we drought on the prairie isn't a pretty important thing, so we like to induce drought where we can in shallow lakes temporarily for a year or two to get rid of the invasive fish and rejuvenate the aquatic ecology of those marshes and bring the plants and aquatic invertebrates back. So here's some pictures of what we do, and the people that do this for Ducks Unlimited include engineers. We have a team of nearly a dozen engineers that work in the state. This is a group of them and biologists on a structure they designed on the outlet of Shell Lake. And these are the types of engineering marvels that we put them to work on, especially during flood events where we really need to worry about how these structures are designed to manage wetlands and not flood downstream landowners. This is a time series picture of a shallow lake that was drawn down temporarily for one growing season. You can see it was devoid of aquatic plants when we drew it down. The fish were removed, the sediments were consolidated, the plants responded, and when the hydrology comes back, we have an enhanced marsh. This is Smith Lake in Wright County out on Highway 12. You can see how turbid it is from the air photo. Pretty much just chocolate milk. Doesn't take any science there to know that's a problem. During the drawdown, we not only remove fish and consolidate nutrients, but shorebird habitat is enhanced at that time, too. You can see that picture there. And the birders in this state really key in on a lot of the lakes that we draw down for ducks. The shorebirds show up, and the birders are out there enjoying spotting species they don't have on their list. This is what the lake looked like after a drawdown. You can see that you can actually see through the water the aquatic plants growing in the bottom of that lake that weren't there before, and that's what it looks like from the shore. Clear water, you can see the aquatic plants through the water column. You can also see aquatic invertebrates. Those are Daphnia that are a duck food, but they're just a good indicator of overall aquatic health in the wetland system. Another example down in Freeborn County, 2,200-acre Freeborn Lake, and again, that's an undoctored air photo. It's green. It's a problem lake. It's only 3-4 feet deep, but it's pea green. So this was the dam that was built on the outlet way back in the Works Progress Administration era. Decades ago, and it's failing, but it's also holding the water stable, and stability is the death knell for ecological productivity. So our engineers designed a variable crest water control structure that would allow for a temporary water level drawdown, rejuvenating the aquatic plants and the mudflats, clearing up the water, and you can see the color of the water leaving the lake now after that drawdown. It's clear enough to see through. And so we're helping downstream water quality as well. We're doing it for the ducks, but it's benefiting a larger set of users, and the lake's coming back to health right now. Eagle Lake in McLeod County, again, an undoctored air photo showing how turbid the water is compared to some other lakes in the area that don't have those problems. The DNR decided this was the 50th designated wildlife lake in the state. They did some sampling there and showed the lake's only 4 to 5 feet deep at most, but there's very few aquatic plants. This was the outlet structure built again decades ago. I don't really understand what it was supposed to do, but it wasn't working. We redesigned that and re-engineered it to, again, a more modern structure that the DNR could use to manage the lake. Did a drawdown. Winter killed some invasive fish. The lake came back to health there, responding to the drawdown, and the water is crystal clear, full of aquatic plants. You can see through the water. This was in July. We did a dedication with the Minnesota DNR of this project, and luckily, Lessard Council Chairman, Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council Chairman, Bob Anderson, and his wife drove down from International Falls to join us for the day and got to take a boat ride out on the lake, and it was quite a day. Here's a quick video of that tour out on the lake, and you can see the clear water and the aquatic plants. It's only a minute long, so it'll go pretty quick here. The whole time we were touring out through the lake, the black terns were soaring over our heads. Nesting birds from the marsh were getting up.
I had the environmental site director call.
Again, the aquatic plants, the water clarity is important because the plants can't grow in the water unless the sunlight can penetrate through the water column there, and you can see the sago pondweed and other aquatic plants that were absent in that lake when it was in the turbid state. In addition to shallow lake work, we're focused in the prairie pothole part of the state. Ducks need breeding habitat too, and we've lost most of what we had here. Only 10% of Minnesota's prairie wetlands remain, and only less than 1% of our prairie uplands. So this is what we're trying to acquire and restore for the DNR here. Small wetland basins surrounded by grass that the ducks can nest in. They nest up to a mile away from water, some dabbling ducks do. So it takes both the wetlands and the prairie to provide them with the breeding habitat they need. And this is a restored wetland in Cottonwood County. You can see how lush and responsive those wetlands can be. We're trying to target our land acquisition to complement existing DNR ownership, filling in the patches in a like putting a puzzle back together. So in this case, the yellow rectangle is 80 acres right adjoining on two sides to an existing state wildlife management area, and that's the field we purchased, and this it seeded it down, and it was being restored last fall. Those wetlands will be restored now this summer. Another example down in Martin County, where the land around a shallow lake was tiled and the wetlands drained years ago, and we purchased that from a willing seller to benefit both the shallow lake and restore the uplands. We started with tree removal and seeding of the native plants back to the site, and now we're going to tackle 30 miles of pattern tile that went into that property to drain it into Round Lake, which is why Round Lake is turbid and chocolate milk colored, and that work will start this summer, and that's where those wetlands will be. And that's part of a larger growing complex in partnership with the Fox Lake Conservation League and the DNR and other partners there to acquire a few more tracts here in the future to put a complex back together. This project in Sibley County is on Indian Lake, same thing. We've purchased four tracts of land from willing sellers, one contacting us after another, interested in benefiting the lake. They all care about Indian Lake. They all remember what it used to be years ago, and they want to see us help them put the landscape back together around Indian Lake. And you can see the restorable wetlands on those parcels that were drained years ago. The last tract I'll show you is our biggest project to date. It's the 640-acre Jones tract we purchased in Nobles County. It was wedged right between the 120-acre existing Schlesinger WMA on the north and 160-acre Bloom WPA in the south, and we restored over 30 wetland basins, totaling about 100 acres there. 3,000 feet of prairie stream channel was restored, 2 miles of drain tile removed, 33,000 cubic yards of sediment removed from wetlands where it had been farmed through over the years. And these are some pictures of those prairie pothole wetlands after they were restored. And, of course, the waterfowl return. And with that, I express my appreciation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schneider. Looks like we have a question here. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Schneider, how do you decide what shallow lake needs to be restored?
Mr. Schneider.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, great question. We work in partnership with the Minnesota DNR, and that one image I showed of Eagle Lake where they sampled points out in the lake to document the need. The Minnesota DNR has a shallow lakes program. They have a staff of biologists that go out and survey shallow lakes that appear to be impaired or degraded from a wildlife habitat standpoint. They collect the data. They hold the meetings with the stakeholders, and they ask for our help when engineering assistance is needed. So it's in partnership with the DNR.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. And, Mr. Schneider, so, I mean, they could come out and explain what needs to be done to restore a lake.
Mr. Schneider.
Mr. Chair and members, they could. Generally, they focus on shell lakes that are accessible by the public, that have legal access by the public. So some shell lakes are entirely privately owned. And where the public has a vested interest in the improvement of those lakes, they would indeed come out and talk to landowners, and if it looked like it was needed, they'd do some sampling.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. I might have one in mind for you.
I believe Representative Erdahl lives on a what shallow lake. Thank you very much for coming. I just want to tell you, one of the members, just one of the neat things about what goes on here with the Lessard Sam's money is that the we're hearing from the Ducks Unlimited folks, but there's the Pheasants and the Trout Unlimited and Deer Hunters, and I don't know who else I'm missing. But so that's going on with relationship to the DNR folks doing work, and then often with the conservation group. So it's all this intertwined effort. So thank you very much for what you're doing, sir.
Thank you.
And your groups. Next, we have someone from the DNR. Are you welcome? And a couple people. Thank you very much. Go ahead, Hand. Thank you very much. And thank you for coming today. We're enjoying this. So, please state your name and tell us your story.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Hello, my name is Melissa Scholand, and I am the Habitat Coordinator for Minnesota DNR's St. Louis River Restoration Initiative located in Duluth. And I also have with me Daryl Peterson. I'll let him, you want to introduce yourself?
Thank you, sir. Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, representatives, my name is Daryl Peterson. I'm the Director of Restoration Programs for the Minnesota Land Trust, and we're a partner that helps with some of the restoration work at the estuary.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for the opportunity to present today, and we're really excited to talk about the successes that we have had thanks to Outdoor Heritage Fund support. The Restoration Initiative is a collaborative program working to enhance and restore a unique and valuable state resource, the St. Louis River Estuary. Our vision for the estuary was formally established in 2002 with the creation of the Lower St. Louis River Habitat Plan. This vision includes diverse, productive, and healthy ecosystems of the river and watershed. The efforts required to implement the Habitat Plan truly represent a legacy-style project with a scope that can only be accomplished with the support of a program like Minnesota's Outdoor Heritage Fund. The St. Louis River Estuary was once one of Minnesota's crown jewels. The estuary contains nearly all of the state's coastal marsh habitat. This is a habitat type that is ranked by the Minnesota Biological Survey as critically imperiled. With OHF support, we are implementing projects to achieve objectives such as restoring legacy industrial sites, recovering lost fish and wildlife populations, and improving access for all. Although the lower St. Louis River is a remarkable resource, it also has decades of industrial use that have affected habitat quality and biological productivity. Some of these impacts include, but aren't limited to, things like logging era sawmills, passage barriers, hardened shorelines, and wetland fill. The St. Louis River Restoration Initiative is a legacy-style project. Our goal is to restore or enhance more than 1,400 acres of fish and wildlife habitat in the estuary. To do this, we target high-impact sites to best impact the overall estuary system. The Outdoor Heritage Fund has been instrumental in completing the Restoration Initiative's projects. Since 2012, we have completed more than a dozen large-scale protection or restoration projects with our partners. At Radio Tower Bay, we removed over 100,000 cubic yards of industrial wood waste, restoring that estuary marsh habitat. Where it was once too shallow and choked with wood waste to allow access by fish or anglers, the bay has now become a favored location for musky anglers in search of trophy fish. Another project at Chambers Grove not only had lake sturgeon spawning along the restored shoreline within months of project completion, but this area also now hosts an annual Paddle the Pads fly fishing tournament. Last year's winner caught a 19-inch smallmouth bass in the habitat features that were created by this project. This project at Chambers Grove really succeeded in restoring both fish habitat and restored a community connection to the river. We are continuing to work on projects with your support. We seek to reestablish harvestable wild rice beds, working with the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa and also the 1854 Treaty Authority. We are also working with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Audubon, and local University of Minnesota researchers to recover piping plover and common tern habitat. So we're really seeing the results. Lake sturgeon are returning to spawn in the lower Lake St. Louis River. Muskie populations are on the rise, and latest estimates indicate that 2% of the population are now trophy size, which is greater than 50 inches. DNR surveys indicate that game fish and forage fish populations are beginning to see improvements as well. Where we've been doing post-restoration monitoring at our Radio Tower Bay project, we're now seeing greater fish diversity, we're seeing larger sizes of fish, and also a larger percentage of the population made up of a game fish community. Other outcomes are that more people are using the river than ever before. Our work in collaboration with the City of Duluth's revitalization efforts have created a new interest in the river. We believe that because of a cleaner environment with more fish and wildlife resources, better access, we are seeing more people of all ages enjoying the outdoors along the St. Louis River. Some examples of these enjoyments are the Twin Ports Annual Walleye Tournament, the Duluth Youth Outdoors Program, and also then the Paddle the Pads fly fishing tournament that I talked about. That wouldn't have been created if not for the restoration done at Chambers Grove. So with all that, there's still more to do. We've celebrated significant progress and success, but to realize our vision for the lower St. Louis River, Minnesota DNR partners are currently using Outdoor Heritage funds to strategically leverage federal funding to restore a variety of habitats throughout the estuary. To date, we have matched Outdoor Heritage Fund dollars with over $17 million in federal funding, primarily from sources like the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative. We will continue to restore Lake Superior estuary marsh habitat, providing that habitat for all life stages of fish. And the Outdoor Heritage Fund is also supporting improvements to the hydrology, habitat, and aesthetic functions in cold water trout streams as well. And just a couple closing thoughts. As a habitat resource, there really is nothing else quite like the St. Louis River estuary in Minnesota or the entire Great Lakes. It really is just that unique. And as a legacy restoration project, is unparalleled as well. It's one of the largest restoration efforts ever undertaken in our history, and it wouldn't be possible without the support of the Outdoor Heritage Fund. So thanks again for letting us come here today and share stories.
Thank you, Michelle, and thank you very much for telling us about especially the St. Louis River and what It really has been a major change in the last few years that's gone on up there, and I hear a lot of sports people talking about touring from, you know, going from up here, and I have a Hmong neighbor that wants to go up and fish for the big sturgeon, and it's pretty neat. I believe that we could all stay at Representative Murphy's home if we need a place to stay, and then she could drive our boat, I believe, or we can put the fish in the boat for her. I'm getting stared. I think I just lost some bonding projects. Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank you, everyone.
So you're both kind of Representative Murphy.
The other day, I saw in the local newspaper there's job availability for people that are going seasonal workers to do something with the plover. What are they going to do with plover? Do they count them or what?
Ms. Scholin.
Yep. Yes, Representative Murphy and members of the committee, I know that we do have the St. Louis River Alliance is the one getting volunteers to help doing monitoring for piping plover. So out along Minnesota Point looking for any nesting. And should a volunteer encounter a nest, there would be massive efforts to protect it throughout the season.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I told this friend of mine that just became unemployed that these jobs were available, but my friend didn't seem very interested, and that's why I had to ask the question, so now I can go back with more information. So it's just walking around and looking for nests and counting.
Ms. Scholin.
Representative Murphy, I believe so, yes.
Probably not a permanent job, but an opportunity. Right. Not to be passed over. Good idea. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. I do have one quick question. On one of your slides, you show the kids out there on the water, and is it kind of like the ICANN program through the DNR, or it sounded like it was a local Duluth kind of effort, so it might sounds like it might be different. Do you have a comment on that, or? Mr. Peterson?
Yeah. Mr. Chair and representatives, that's through the Duluth Youth Outdoors Initiative, and the city of Duluth is really getting very engaged in the restoration and recovery of the St. Louis River and seeing it as a real key to their revitalization, kind of community revitalization. So they've been running a number of programs to get kids outside from different communities within Duluth, different neighborhoods, kind of addressing that adventure gap issue that we need kids going outside so they understand and appreciate the outdoors, so in the future they're going to appreciate and support the outdoors and things like the Outdoor Heritage Fund. So that we see this as a really important engagement process to get kids outside onto the river.
Thank you both very much for coming and the work that you're doing. Very much appreciated.
Thank you.
So I think we have another person from the DNR. Or is that it? Mr. Hope? We're a little bit over, so you only have 32 seconds. No, go. I'm kidding. Please tell your story, and we're excited to hear it.
Thank you. My name is Greg Hoke with the DNR. I'm the Prairie Habitat Team Supervisor, and I manage the DNR's grassland enhancement grants. Joe asked me to come here today to talk specifically about our three roving crews located in Polk County, Lac La Parle, and the Rosemont area. Each crew is 8 full-time member or full-time staff that work 12 months of the year. They don't go to meetings. They don't deal with budgets. They're outside every day, rain or shine, doing good habitat work. They are only doing work on permanently protected land, primarily fee title land, such as wildlife management areas, scientific natural areas, as well as some easements. Looking at my last two final reports that I submitted to Mark and Joe, and my last status update, in the last few years, these roving crews together have done 116,200 acres of grassland enhancement in the state of Minnesota. And it's not just them. These crews will work with existing DNR staff. They'll work with Nature Conservancy staff. They'll work with Fish and Wildlife Service staff to do some really big projects, especially large burns. So as kind of a theme running through all of these presentations. We all work together. We all communicate very well, and it's working really well out there. Some of the projects are doing seeding, building fences for conservation grazing, tree removal, and especially prescribed fire. So just a couple of things they do. Here's some a couple of groups harvesting some prairie seed as well as harvesting some wild rice and seeding it. Prescribed fire, again, is one of our biggies. Lots of cool pictures and lots of cool equipment that we have to do fire with. And then one of the other things we really work on has been, again, been touched on here today is tree removal. This is a photo from John Peter Hoffman Springs Brook Valley WMA down in Goodhue County where they removed eastern red cedar. They're already seeing quite a few species of plants show up, including prairie violet, which is a species that the regal fritillary, which is an endangered butterfly, needs. Actually, it's a species of conservation concern in Minnesota. Talking to the Lac La Parle roving crew, they removed some cedars on some trees just last March. When the local area manager went out to that site only 2 months later, he saw a large amount of prairie smoke, which is one of the earliest blooming spring wildflowers. He recorded a larger number of bobolinks, one of everybody's favorite songbirds. He saw sandhill cranes, and he flushed several pheasants. The Polk County roving crew conducted a 600-acre brush shearing up on the Red Lake Wildlife Management Area. They said within a couple of weeks, there were five moose using the area. They had quite a few flocks of sharp-tailed grouse, as well as rough grouse and spruce grouse were seen on the area. So as you can see, quite often conservation work takes a long time to do. In many cases, you do something and the wildlife and the plants respond almost instantly. The other thing I'd just like to say, again, hearkening back to some of the other things, the signs that we have out there are just showing up everywhere. They're becoming ubiquitous on the landscape, just showing that these outdoor heritage funds are touching properties across the western and southern part of the state. And for all the work we're doing, not just the DNR, but all of our partners in the state of Minnesota, the final product we're after is a diverse and productive landscape, both for wildlife, grasslands, Neil mentioned earlier, water retention, carbon storage, things like that. With that, I'll be able to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, sir. Lasard Sams was very interested in the burning cruise. It was we spent quite a bit of time listening and talking about it, and your excitement about it and was contagious, but it's very much part of the effort, like you just mentioned, to restore and protect and enhance. So thank you very much, sir, and your diligent work. I'm going to make my CA very mad for a second here. Thank you very much, sir. I was wondering if Mr. Lucheski could come forward and tell us about trouts just for 2 minutes. I couldn't resist because my legislative assistant, they have some relationship, but the name might sound familiar as well. But nonetheless, Trout has been a partner, Trouts Unlimited, and been a great partner and doing great things around the state. He did not ask for this, so this awkward moment's provided for the chair. You have 1 minute, though. That's it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is John Lincheski. I'm here on behalf of Minnesota Trout Unlimited, and as Mr. Pavelka said, if the when the chair asks, you don't say no. So here I am. I don't have any pictures. I just really want to thank you for the opportunity and past support. But just to briefly mention our projects, we do fish habitat projects around the state. We've done about a little over 70 projects and 70 miles of stream, as well as 6 trout lakes. Many of them are concentrated in the northeast and southeast because that's where most of our trout streams are. But we work on degraded habitat. Restoring degraded habitat on existing permanently protected land. So we're not buying land. This is what we currently have, and typically an easement, and we're restoring that habitat, making them resilient for flooding. We work with landowners, especially in the southeast. It's ag country, and we work with farmers. Typically, we can get some federal cost share involved to do more work down there, but the farmers become great supporters of the projects. We use different methods depending on the site, different type of practices in an active pasture. Then where there's no pasture, we lots of times the landowners will decide to do managed grazing. They actually get more animals off the land than just sort of letting them go. So even on a completed project, we have better fish habitat, better grassland, more productive, profitable farm, quite frankly. So we're always looking for those opportunities. We're about fish habitat, so typically in the southeast it might be a 10% increase in trout numbers. That's our main focus. There's lots of benefits for water quality, birds, other wildlife, reptiles, amphibians. But to Representative Green's point, we only work where there's access for anglers. So there's other permanently protected land. We only work where there's actually public access for fishing. And that's it in a nutshell. And thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. And thank you for being partners with the state and doing good works with the Stowers. So with that, Vice Chair Wozlik's going to take over, and then I'm going to.
All right, Chair Lilly, the second bill we have today is House File 340, and Chair Lilly, would you like to move House File 340 be laid over for possible inclusion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I'd like to move that House File 340 be laid over for possible inclusion.
And you have an author's amendment coded A7. Would you like to just briefly tell us what that is?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's just a previous committee, there was some work done on the CPL area, and it was not exactly what it ended up not being exactly what people hoped the change would be, so it's just kind of straightening that up, I believe. So,
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So to the A7 amendment, I had a question. I'm seeing on page 19, line 21, I got that. Okay, there's a change that's happening there. But is there another change that needs to happen? The total amount spent in the appropriation, or is we? How's that being handled?
Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Heitzman, for pointing that out. I believe that reflects our latest forecast. So it's adjusting the CPL grant number down to reflect the change in the forecast number. So it's going down a couple hundred thousand dollars to meet it. And it kind of seemed to make the most sense to take it from that area instead of some of the specific projects.
Representative Heinzman.
I have to wait for a verbal acknowledgement. Thank you, Madam Chair. So Representative Lilly, I just want to confirm, is there anywhere else in the bill that number may be impacted, that on 19, that decrease? Is there anywhere else in the language that it would have to change?
Madam Chair, I'm getting a nod from Mr. Johnson, who's the director of the Lasard Sams. My understanding is, Ms. Taylor has a comment too. Maybe she could
Ms. Taylor?
Comment.
Madam Chair, I think if you look at line 1.6 of the amendment, that'll automatically adjust any numbers to reflect the change here, if that is what your question is.
Yep. Further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the author's amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. The A7 amendment is adopted. Chair Lilly, we've already kind of heard some of the testimony on the bill, but if you have anything else you'd like to add into discussing this.
So thank you, Madam Chair and members. So we've kind of heard just kind of generally what's kind of done with this money from, you know, many of the people that are recipients. So I'd like to pass it to Mr. Johnson. I realize we're pressed for time, but I guess we are going to hear from Mr. Anderson, who's come all the way from International Falls, but he's the current chair of the Lasard Sam's Council. We elected him, so he's not only a mayor from International Falls, but he's come down and put his neck in the noose for this leadership role for this. But it's I'm pretty impressed with the people that have been on this commission. There's you know, there's different appointees, but he comes all the way from International Falls and is very interested in all ends of Minnesota and just done a great job. But thank you,
Mr. Anderson. Go ahead and state your name for the record, and you can begin.
Thank you. Bob Anderson, chair of the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. And my primary purpose in being here today is to say thank you to Representative Lilly for his service on the Lasard Sam's Council. He joined the council in the untimely departure of State Representative David Dill. And it was about, the council was about midway through their process of working on applications that year, so it was a difficult time, but Representative Lilly stepped up and filled that vacancy very well and helped us complete the year. I do want to say, I recall the our last meeting in December of 2018, and the forecast at that point had some additional monies in it. We didn't know what might happen to those, but Representative Lilly came to the meeting with a plan and recommendation, and they were those recommendations were adopted by the council. Did a great job. We will certainly miss his dedication and his leadership on the council. So just wanted to share that with the members of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you, actually.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson.
That's unexpected and nice.
I would like to just further note that the for the record that the council the bill that you have before you is was unanimously recommended by the council. Thank you,
Mr. Johnson. Please state your name for the record, and you can begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mark Johnson, Executive Director for the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. Madam Chair and members, the bill before you is pretty straightforward. You did hear some of the testimony. There are the numbers will be changed slightly by a total of $378,000 with the amendment that was incorporated. Other than that, the if you have any questions, we can certainly answer them for the bill. I know we did go through this in environment as well. There are some technical amendments at the back. Again, those have gone through the council and through leadership. So I'll just leave it at that for you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair.
Yep. Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, there's did we provide these?
Yes.
So in your packet, you'll see a real thorough of where the projects are going around the state and really take a chance or a few seconds to look at it and see where it's going into Prairie or Restoration or where exactly the projects are, what region, and then there's the, you know, there's, you know, where the projects have done, sorry, put that in front of your face, so, but just all over the state projects have been done. So I gladly have questions later, but I really want to get to Representative Green's amendment too and be respectful of that. So
any further discussion on the bill at all? We do have an amendment coded A5. Representative Green is offering an A5 amendment. Representative Green, would you mind telling us about the amendment, please?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move my amendment. This is an amendment that has gone on to the legacy actually in the last 2 years. With this amendment on, I would like to say that I'll take credit for the fact that the legacy bill passed the House floor with unanimous vote, and this was one of the reasons why. What this does, and there's a lot of misconception about this this amendment, and that it somehow prevents counties from being able to have more public land purchased in their county, and that's not what it does at all. What it does do is give the counties who choose to file no net gain policies the ability to say we can't lose any more land with our private land within our county. And so they would have the option to say if Commissioner of Natural Resources, for instance, has legacy dollars and they want to purchase a piece of land, that they would the county could say, okay, you could do that, but you have to sell off the same amount of land, whether it be in 40-acre sections, 80-acre sections, of equal value, so we hold our county harmless on property tax and also on the ability for to have land available for young families, for instance, who may want to move into our county, because we're having a real problem in greater Minnesota and mostly in the north. I'm going to give you one example. I did. There should be some papers being passed around. Okay. Yep. And but I'll bring your attention to one of those in there from Wadena County is the latest one. And I'm not going to read this because I'm not going to bore you. But if you take the time to read it, you will see that in negotiations back in 2015, the DNR dealt with Wadena County to, for the purchase of 2,000 acres that they said they needed to complete a section that they had for trails and also for some recreation. And the deal that they made with the county was that they were going to sell acreage back, and so the county would be held harmless in that. And if you'll read here, you'll see that that was 4 years ago, and so far they've sold approximately 240 acres of that 2,000. And it's been a battle, and I'm not exaggerating at all, it's been a battle just to get that much sold back. And so, you know, we've looked at a lot of good projects, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I don't think that these projects are good. I do. I believe that there should be a lot more restoration. I think if you look in page 3 of the bill, you'll see that on 3.1, Minnesota Prairie Recovery, it talks about the amount of acres that are impacted is 140,000, and out of that, 500 of that is in fee, title and fee. So approximately, if I'm reading it right, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, about 13,500 acres would be restored and 500 acres purchased. But if you break that down, one-third of that money goes for the acquisition, and so the two-thirds of it actually restores 13,500 acres instead of purchases 500. So there's a lot better uses for this money than just acquiring more land. The other thing, if you do look through the bill, some of the things that bother us in greater Minnesota, and I'll just do the first few here. On page 2.1, there's 400 acres being acquired, and this is under prairies, and yet if you look into the binder, you'll see that only 40 acres of those are native prairies. And the rest is other land that they're converting into prairies, I guess. The second one is the same. There's about 1,000 acres being purchased, and only 17 of those are native prairie. And then a lot of this stuff is farmed. It's farmed, and you know, I know there's a big stink over GMOs. I don't seem to mind GMOs, but a lot of people do. But a lot of these things, when they're planted and farmed, they're planted with GMOs. So for me, I only mention that because it seems a little hypocritical that we hear all this talk about non-GMO, but our state is not only grazing this land, but it's also farming this land. And if the best practice on this land is to farm it, then why not leave it in private hands? And I won't, you know, I could go on for a long time. I've gone through this book as I do every year, and I will just probably bore you, and I know we don't have much time, but I would like you to consider my amendment seriously. This is it's a good amendment. It's a safeguard. It doesn't prevent anybody from selling their land. It simply says in areas like Beltrami, where there are over 90% public lands in that county. Here it says 54, but that's only state, doesn't count federal. You know, they're saying that's all we can do. We still have to have our property tax value, and we still have to have a place for our families to live. And you're taking it all. And you're taking it with our own money. And so this is a safeguard, and I would ask people to support this amendment.
Chair Lilly, would you like to speak to response to the amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Green. I at this time, I'm not really in support of your amendment. I know that's probably not a surprise, but I really, you know, in the last few years, my time on the council, my sense is, and maybe I can be corrected, but I really feel that you have moved the needle on the discussion, and I think they're very conscientious of purchases. and you know, try to be respectful. I think they are doing a lot more effort in the, as we heard earlier, maybe in the tall grass area where, you know, the prairies. Some of the problems, though, that you mentioned aren't that easy, because a lot of the land has already been tilled up. So to find native isn't quite as easy. So that's, you know, to restore something might make some more sense. So like we heard from Mr. Schneider from the Ducks group, you know, they may need to change the habitat to reestablish some of the native pothole prairie, if you will, you know, from take it out of some of the farm kind of effort. There are cases, too, just to be clear to members, that, you know, people want to sell their land. And, it, you know, so if you're in a county that has some of this, where it's not as easy maybe to sell. I mean, I know you said they still can, but so you get into a property rights issue where, you know, if Mr. Green, if you wanted, or Representative Green, if you wanted to sell your land, you might at times feel different, you know, if the county said, hey, you can't. So it's funny that that just seems like you would totally, I just can't imagine someone telling you what to do and how that would go. So I just, I'm a little surprised that, you know, that you would support the county commissioners in that way. But I respect you a ton, and I've heard this. It went to conference committee last year, and it was, I believe, Chair Gunther at the time had it in his bill, right? And then it did not survive conference committee. And I'm pretty sure that I'm pretty sure from across the street, I don't know that they would have full-on support at this point either. But I don't know if anybody else has a comment. I think the commission or the council is really trying to make an effort to respect those. And I really, I know you don't want to hear this, but I think you've been successful about bringing this issue up and moving the needle on this.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, that's fine. Thank you. I shouldn't say thank you for not furthering my amendment, but you know, you're respectful, and I understand that. But I will tell you that this year, last year, the amount of land that was purchased was cut in half. This year, it's back up to right around 12,000 again. So the, you know, as far as moving the needle, if it was moved, it was only for 1 year, and now it's back there again. And just to let people know that if you took the public land in Minnesota right now, we are dangerously close to, if not already, at one-third of our mass is in public ownership, and we are in huge danger of becoming tenants of our own state. And as far as the willing seller goes, there also should be a willing buyer. And the question then is, should we as state members that now have access to someone else's money be able to use that money to go purchase property away from other willing buyers? And they're out there. And I don't ask them to come down, because they would have to travel 5 hours one way for a two-minute testimony, and I won't do that. And I am their representative, and so I'm going to continue to do that. But just, it wasn't a month ago now again that a young farmer told me that he had been renting, and I think it was 2,500 acres for the last 5 or 6 years. And because the state came in, the guy was going to sell the property, and the state came in and offered more than he could afford to pay. And I've heard the story time and again where the state says we don't pay more than X amount. But I can tell you from experience and from the people that are out there that's just not true. And so this is a real problem. I think that we are now on our 11th year, I believe, on this legacy amendment. There are some problems with it. And I know that there's people that are always out there, and you say, you know, we've had way more requests. Well, you know what? If you hold out a fistful of cash, you're going to have a lot of requests. And so what is being responsible? And so, you know, I think that if we don't take care of this and some other things within the legacy, then I see potentially that not only will it not make it to the 34, we need to put it back on the ballot. If we can't be responsible with what we're doing right now, then I think this needs to go back to the people and have them ask again, give them the facts as to what's going on, and say, do you still want this? And we've had 10 years to look at it. Let's take a look at all the projects, where all the money's going, and ask the people if this is really what they want.
Seeing no further discussion on the amendment, all those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay.
No.
The amendment is not adopted. Any brief public testimony about for or against this bill? Final thoughts from Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. And I'm sorry, this is it's a big bill, but I wanted you to hear from some of the projects that have been done in the state. And I really want to thank the presenters that came, and we could have filled up the room with many of them, of course. But thank you for Mr. Anderson and his leadership and council. It's really been a neat experience. I'm not a full-on hunter, so they still let me on. I'm more of a fishing person, but they still let me sit with them. But it isn't just about that, as we heard today. It's very much about preservation and restoring habitat and that sort of thing. We're really blessed with amazing staff, too, with Mr. Johnson and Joe, as we heard from earlier, and then Sandy and Becky with our council. And any member, you're welcome to go down. And I know Representative Green, I'm sorry, but Representative Green's been down and into their offices, or right as you go to MnDOT to the left there, in there, right across from the cash machine or whatever. You don't have to bring cash. But they're right there and available for any question that you might have. But it's been an honor to serve on there, so thank you, Speaker Doubt, when he was for that. But Representative Becker Finn's going to take over for me, and Representative Fabian's going to continue to serve. I just want to give brief credit to Representative Green, because he has been he actually really does look at the proposals. He looks at them and studies them, and I sincerely do have respect for you, sir. And he looks at the auditor's reports and really does have does his homework. But anyways, thank you, Madam Chair. I hope that we could lay this over for possible inclusion.
Chair Lilly renews his motion to lay HF 340 as amended over for possible inclusion. HF 340 is laid over.
Thank you.
Seeing no further business, committee is adjourned.